The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I want to start out this show today by just saying the biggest thank you to all the past guests, all the bartenders, the bar owners, the brand ambassadors, the distillers, the brewers, the winemakers, the chefs, and everyone in between, in all around the world that's been listening to this show and been on the show. We had our 100th episode, not last week, because we were at Tales of the Cocktail, but the week right before that. And I can't tell you how much I really appreciate having the opportunity to not only like host a show and talk about something that we're all very passionate about, but also to have so many good people on the show and listening to the show. I just want to say a big thank you for that. We did take a break after the 100th episode 2 weeks ago for the big Tales of the Cocktail Conference. And I want to give a big shout-out to everyone that was there and participating, showing off their goods and some of their bads. But also, I want to give a big congratulations to the Nomad and to Clover Club and to the Dead Rabbit, totally representing New York City and like taking away a lot of the spirited awards. Big shout out to everyone there for that. And I can't think of a better way to kick off the next 100 episodes to come with none other than a friend of the show already, good friend of mine and also one of my bartenders and tiki expert, Garrett Richard. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Damon.
Dude, it's awesome. I'm so glad to have you, man.
I do need to say, I've been listening to your show before I was a bartender, so if that has any weight to it. When I was working in radio, when I was in between, you know, sessions and all that stuff, I was listening to you on the radio.
That's awesome.
And it was a good insight into what was coming ahead for me. So
I think that's one of the things that we first talked about. I remember meeting you about that time, about 2.5 years ago. Was it at one of the Tiki Mondays with Brian Miller? Or was it like...
It was even before that. I remember
you came into the bar.
I came into your bar and I was referencing your third episode with Adam.
Yeah.
And I just thought that, you know, at Prime Meats you always had Benedictine and, you know, bananas and rum agricole and falernum. And you could make a Papeterie paralyzer for me. You know, little did I know how annoying that order was, but you made me a Das Boot instead, which is a really great tiki drink with Underberg and creme de cacao. And you didn't even have a name for it at that point. That's how
Adam,
long ago it was.
Tiki Adam named that one for me. Actually, he named the Papeterie paralyzer as well.
Yeah, he's good at that.
You know, I can name like dark boozy stir drinks, but you know, like when it comes to tiki drinks, I could probably throw a name or two into the hat, but you know, guys like you and Tiki Adam, Brian Miller, you guys are the ones with the real wordsmiths, as it were.
The flair for the exotic, yeah. Yeah, well, it's hard to name tiki drinks after a prog rock, you know, album.
Exactly. So, actually, I mean, you've been, over the past, you know, couple of years, I mean, like, you've really blown up, like, as far as, not only the cocktail world, but specifically like the tiki cocktail world, you've really made a big name for yourself. You made a big splash, as it were.
Oh, Jesus. Well, that's generous of you to say, but I mean, I care about this category very much. And, you know, to tie into your last episode, I'm here to promote, I'm throwing a bunch of luau's at the Res Space, which was opened by the Franks, which
the last episode we
last
had.
Episode. Yeah, we're going to continue. Damon doesn't know this, but we're going to do every end of the episode is going to continue into the next one until, you know, you find out that the island wasn't real. And what does the church mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's this is a high concept podcast we're on right now.
No one really knew that going into episode 3 with Tiki Adam, but yeah, it's like basically we are the lost of radio.
But basically, last year, I started, I did a luau in Jersey at Catherine Lombardi at Francis Schott and Mark Pascal's restaurant. They're old friends of Dale DeGroff. And they actually have another podcast that I was listening to when I was an enthusiast called The Restaurant Guys. And I would always see them at Tiki Mondays and at different events. And I knew that they were friends with Brian Miller, and I had worked with him once before at that point and was a regular there. And I wanted to bring those two together. And so we did a pig roast in Jersey. We had Beach Bum Barry come out. We had a lot of New York crowd come out to Jersey for a luau. So once I was given the opportunity by the Franks to do something with the Red Space and Red Hook, I was like, well, if people are going to come out to Jersey for a luau, they better damn well come to Red Hook for a luau, especially since the Space and Res is, it's beautiful. It's an outdoor garden. There's barbecue and there's a full bar there that, you know, I'm going to take full advantage of, and a frozen drink machine, which Damon had the opportunity a couple weeks ago to use it. You know, he took it on its maiden voyage, and I'll just say I don't remember much about it, but I had a lot of fun.
And your girlfriend definitely just like chastised me earlier about the aftermath of that.
Yeah, I had to visit May at her cafe that she was working at, and you know I did give a little bit of fair warning, but it was it was not a good first impression for the staff there.
But yeah, I mean, like, let's talk about that for a second, like. Frozen drinks machines. All right. I mean, like, I get so caught up in, like, antique barware, stuff from, like, the 19th century, like, crystal mixing glasses and old, like, silver jiggers and, like, bar tools and everything. But God damn it, man.
I
just changed my life.
No, like, I know.
It's my first time to ever use a frozen drink machine. And it's, like, I'll throw all that away. I'll trade them all in. For a frozen drink machine.
No more bitters bottles. But, I mean, it's I get it, because it's like punch, but you get this, like, beautiful texture. It's
frozen.
And it's frozen, and you can do things that maybe you wouldn't do in punch. Like, you wouldn't put, you know, banana puree and, you know, cucumber water in punch. It just wouldn't work, but...
But in a frozen drink.
In a frozen drink, it's beautiful. And yeah. You see that around the city a little bit. It's not so much, but here at Roberta's, there's, you know, your...
You're drinking one right now.
there's one at Mother's Ruin, which Brian Miller at Tiki Mondays has used quite well. So I'm excited to do it. Actually, to plug the menu, we're going to be doing the menu is a completely new set except for this drink, but I've never done it frozen. It's I did it for Remixology, which was literally my first time behind the bar in New York. It was a drink called the Guerrilito, which was paired with Beck's Queso Negro, and it's almost like a spiced colada with lime and mango and cinnamon. You know, it's trying to emulate the Mexican street vendor flavors, which I would pass all the time when I went to my radio job. They would have the spicy mango with the hot sauce and all that stuff. I've never done it as a frozen drink, so I'm really excited to see what that's going to be like.
Nice. Yeah, I am excited to see what it's like. I mean, I'm actually covering for, I think, you on that day.
You're opening, but, so I'll come by afterwards.
If there's any left, I sure hope to have some. You know, go back to the thing you just said about the Remixology and competitions. I know, especially, like, Steve Schneider from Employees Only, he's been on quite a few times. He's in the, like... I believe he's in the Five Timers Club, like in SNL. Like I said,
yeah, I'll get there. At some point.
but you know, he's like he's known well as like you know a competition bartender. You know, well, that's not his title.
No, but he's a competitive person. Yeah. and you know what? He always I did one with him, which was the Bacardi Heritage. Mm-hmm. It was at Lincoln Center, and yeah, he throws a great show. He and his drinks are always great. So it makes sense for him to do those things, you know, those competitions.
Well, the thing is, like, the reason why I brought up the competition bartending in for your competition with Remixology is that, well, first of all, going back to the Dead Rabbit, Jack McGarry got he's 24 years old, and, you know, he won this award at
I was the youngest person in New York doing this, and now I'm just, I'm going to have my quarter life crisis now because of that. Thank you.
But no, but I was going to say is, like, you know, like, I know that in the past we've spoken about this. I don't think that we talked about it last time you were on air with me, but about the competition age limit.
Oh, that was very frustrating for a while. But
was there an age limit for the Remixology?
No, they didn't even ask if I worked for a bar. That's the only way I got in. And I did it. I did it in 2010 in San Francisco.
Just to jump in there real quick.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of people, a lot of brands, and a lot of competitions, they have an age statement.
It's 25 is the age statement, which was difficult for a while. Remixology didn't have that, which I was thankful for. They didn't have a bar association statement either. Usually you're supposed to be associated with the bar. And I did it twice without actually working in a bar, which maybe that's wasn't awesome. The smartest thing, but I guess my philosophy is just jump in head first.
Yeah, totally.
You know? But, you know, it's probably a good thing because now I have a library to work with, which I, you know, maybe didn't. But the other thing is that I like about competitions is I'm the type of person that I forced to try to think of something new with competitions. I'm slowly learning that maybe that's not necessarily the best thing is to go with something that you've made a million times. But it's nice to be forced to be creative that way, especially, you know, throwing in something like I always want to do a tiki spin with things. So with the Remixology, I got one of the best drinks. I got two of the best tiki drinks ever done because of that competition.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think, you know, like before when you were saying that you were, you know, you were collecting Exotica records and like tiki Polynesian music and stuff.
Yeah, that's how I got into it.
And then, like, you were buying all these cocktail books when you were, like, 19 years old. Like, and, like, we share that same, like, kind of history as far as, like, underage, like, enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Which I'm not trying to promote that for anyone who wants to sponsor this show. But
no, just you just have to travel to another country to enjoy your hobby. That's
all. Exactly. But I think it's really cool. I think it's very, like, refreshing, like, the enthusiasm that you have for these drinks and, like, and the history, you know, like, that's why I got into it, too. It was, like, the actual history and, like, the ingredients and, like, just kind of, like, the whole culture around it, too, you know? And, like, so it's, I came into it from a different angle. Like, it was more, like the whiskey-driven kind of stuff. And you came into it from, like, the tiki side. I mean, like, I think it's really cool to, like when you actually know, like, deep down in your soul, like what you want to do with your life and what you're into, I think that's such a cool thing.
Yeah, and it took a while to sort of make that transition, but once it did,
that recipe.
Yeah, that's right. Finalize the specs on my life choices. But, I mean, once it was done, it felt like I've been doing... I mean, I've only been doing this for 2 years, but it feels like I've been doing it much longer just because of how comfortable I am with, you know, with working with you and, you know, everybody else. And I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's good. I mean, like, to me, there are a lot of things, like a lot of like issues with like for my point of view, like hiring good bartenders and people who are very passionate about it. It's kind of a strange curse with like the food and beverage industry that it's such a big industry and you can't expect everyone to be as passionate and as driven as guys like you are, you know?
Sure. Sometimes you have to motivate people with your own passion, you know?
And sometimes, you know, sometimes you,
it's just a job. Yeah. Which is fine.
but you know, like it's, you know, just in the same way that, you know, like if you sell tires, it's like, man, I sell tires for a living, but God, these tires are great, and they're going to save your life one of these days.
If everyone can be as Hank Hill is to propane, then
exactly,
you know, that's an ideal world usually.
Yeah.
But I mean, with the Brooklyn Luau, which is Saturday, July 27th. What's nice is
at Res 372 Columbia.
Yes,
at Red Hook. Plug.
It's nice because a lot of the drinks that I've come up with at Prime Meats for regulars that are tiki inspired, they maybe didn't have a place on the menu, or the menu just, it wasn't the right season or whatnot. And I'm now able to bring all these things to a venue where they can sit and, you know, hopefully this one on Saturday is going to be the first one, but we're going to do at least a few more before the summer is up, and maybe with a few guests. We're working on that.
I'd hang on that backyard even if the snow was coming down, and I kind of have.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's such a cool venue for that, and you know, like you said, you know, it's a great place for luau. We've done a lot of barbecues with, like, Danny Bowen and...
Yeah, I worked that birthday party.
Yeah, on a boat.
Yeah, I wish that boat... one of the Franks, he kept his boat at Res, and it's a beautiful vintage boat, I think from the 60s. A lot of great woodwork on it. And the day before I'm supposed to work this birthday party, I get a text message that says, oh, this is your bar, and it's a boat.
Picture of a boat.
Yeah, and, you know, it was great. It was literally, I made punch and highballs for people, and, you know, I made, I think, about three or four because of how high volume the party was, but it was appropriate. I don't know if anyone on this show knows, but my nickname at Prime Meats, given to me by Jim Kearns, was 10 Gallon because I make so much punch, and... you know, I do sell it, but sometimes it doesn't sell because it's a dead day. You know? But actually, I think at Danny Bowen's birthday party, I probably did sell 10 gallons. So I probably finally lived up to my name. But it was great. I mean, like, later on in the evening, you and I were in the front of the boat talking about life and, you know, lessons and all that good stuff.
That's what we do.
Yeah, the boat's not there, but the camaraderie is still there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with Garrett 10 Gallon Richards.
Yeah.
Life takes its toll in this city. It'll knock you down, hit you straight on your knees.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy, and you're also listening to Garrett Richard shaking up some cocktails for us. We've just been talking about his event that he's going to be kicking off here a few times here for the rest of the summer at Res, down in Red Hook at 372 Columbia. And we're just talking about some tiki culture and some, like, background of influence and imbibing. And what are you making for us now?
So this is going to be the House Mai Tai at the Brooklyn Luau. It's pretty traditional in the Mai Tai sense, but it has the incorporation of coconut black tea from Beverly Hills. It's a tea house that I'm obsessed with. I love it. I always visit it every year during Christmas time with my family. It's called the American Tea Room, and this was the first tea I bought from them, and I was like, I have to do a drink with this. And basically, it's standard Mai Tai, but I use a aged Puerto Rican rum. It's a Rondel Barolito 3-star with the coconut tea, Adam's Orgeat, Pierre Ferrand, dry curacao, and lime.
Cool. I mean, I know you've made a few drinks in the past with the coconut tea, doing like different infusions and whatnot. And I think it's a really cool element. I mean, like, especially like since we don't necessarily have specifically at Primates, like we don't necessarily have like coconut milk or water or like any like actually coconuts in general at all.
Yeah,
like,
and Coco Lopez, it's great. I, you know, there's some drinks of mine that will I'll never substitute Coco Lopez, but to some people it turns them off because, you know, it's thick, it's very sweet, and the tea was an attempt to sort of get a drier coconut flavor
sure.
into a cocktail, which I think is still the holy grail. So, you know, for a lot of tiki people is getting like a good dry coconut sweetener. So this is my attempt at doing it. And right now I'm just putting a lime peel on the top of the drink and some nutmeg. And this Mai Tai is actually, Mai Tai variation is going to be, hopefully, I've gotten confirmation. I just haven't made my flight yet or my hotel reservations, but it's going to be at the Mai Tai Festival at Don the Beachcombers in Maui.
Nice.
Yeah, on August 17th. So hopefully I win.
Nice, dude. You know, okay, so first of all, like, I just want to say this real quick. It's really, like, to me, it's kind of a weird thing to, thank you,
yeah.
To have a lime peel. Like a lime twist, you know? A lot of drinks, I mean, like, specifically anything that has, like, lime juice in it or, you know, any kind of lime element, it's such a, like, really fragrant, like, it's actually kind of, like, grassy to me. And I think it's cool, especially, like, when you do, like, tea punch or anything with, like, a like in, like an agricole rum. I think the lime twist.
The lime is so necessary.
But the twist the itself, yeah. Yeah. And it's like it's something you don't see very often.
Well, you see it a lot in Charles H. Baker.
Sure, sure.
He even garnished the Remember the Maine with it. He said you could use lime or lemon or cherry. So
I always love that when they're like, "Yeah, I can use this or that." But it comes through really well, especially with man. Wow, this is great. This is a really great Mai Tai.
Oh, yeah, thanks, man.
Wow. Especially, like, dude, the lime oil really comes through with the nutmeg. Like, they really, like, go really well together.
And it does go back, like, classically, like, the Trader Vic's Mai Tai needs that half of lime thrown in there. It's not for the pith, it's for the skin.
Yeah.
So this is the same way of doing it, it's just in a different way. And
sure.
I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to do with tiki in general, is to do it classically, but maybe just do it in a different way.
Sure. I mean, but because, like what you said, like a lot of times when you do like a Moscow Mule or like, I mean, like even my buddy Adam Harris from Maker's Mark, like when he does a Mai Tai, he puts the whole shell, like after he juices the lime, he puts the whole shell in there. And you know, it's one thing to see the half shell that's been juiced and then discarded into the drink. You're getting the oils in there. You
yeah.
know? And like with this, it's like, it's the same thing, but it's like a different presentation. And it's like it's kind of a cleaner presentation, really, because when you put the half shell in there, you've got like some pulp hanging out and stuff.
Yeah, there's no pulp in this yeah. one, which is, you know, nice, because I just want the focus on the nutmeg and
yeah.
the spiciness. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is great. This is great. You got any more of these?
Well, I made one for our producer, but he's not coming in here, so you might want to just grab it.
Get in here. There it goes. Grab it. It's right there.
Yeah, it's right
Get
there. On top of the
Cheers.
Mini fridge. On an unrelated note, during the heat wave, I bought myself a mini freezer. It's one of the best ideas I've ever done. I suggest it to anybody.
A better idea than frozen drinks machines?
Well, I can't afford that for my apartment, but if you can't afford a frozen drink machine, buy yourself a mini freezer. It saves a lot of headaches.
Well, on that note, you are a huge, huge fan of the... slurping Mai Tais, but also
yeah.
a huge fan of the Hamilton Beach blender.
Yeah, I almost brought it today, but I am going to have it out in res. I just... So one of my first bar experiences was going to the Tiki Tea. It's the texture that you get from those drinks is just amazing because
it's a milkshake
machine. And the head, yeah, it's a milkshake machine.
So it aerates it as well.
It aerates it. It circulates it. And you know there have been techniques developed in New York to sort of simulate that. The 3-cube shake is one of them. Mm-hmm. The folks at Milk and Honey sometimes and Painkiller do a dry shake and then with a little bit of swizzle, and you do get foam from that. But at home, just and you know, my girlfriend May can attest to this. I will use the Hamilton Beach with crushed ice, actually hand crushed ice. It gives a head that's just amazing, especially if you use a Pilsner glass. It's the same head that you would get on something like a Weihenstephaner or any kind of wheat beer. It's amazing. And the great thing about that is that it pushes the aromatics to your nose throughout the sipping of the cocktail, which, you know, you don't get necessarily with shaken drinks too much.
You know, another thing that I really like is like Tiki Tea in L.A. is, I mean, is it now like the oldest? Or is the Maikai in Florida, is that the oldest tiki bar?
Oh, in America proper, I know there's an older one in LA, but the Maikai is 1959, but I mean between
okay,
the
so
two.
The Tiki Tea is 1962?
Yeah. Yeah, but its roots go back further because the Maikai was Chicago. It has roots to the Don the Beachcomber Chicago, which was in the 60s, but the owner of Tiki Tea, Ray Buin, and his son Mike runs it, and his grandson Mike, and I forget the other grandson's name that just
probably started. Also Mike.
Yeah, it's he's yeah. Anyways, that guy Ray has roots back to 1934. He was in the original Five Boys or whoever that worked for Don the Beachcomber, so he goes back way back with Don. But the Maikai has the reverse sort of issue is that it doesn't go far as back, but it doesn't stray from tradition either. It's, you know, some of those drinks are almost exactly the same. And the innovations that they did are, you know, complete. Like if you've ever had the Black Magic, it's amazing. It's definitely something that, you know, Don would have done in his lifetime.
Yeah. I was thinking about the way you were talking about the technique of using dry shakes or the 3-cube shake. To build up the head on these drinks, but also one thing that they do at Tiki Tea, which I don't think is actually meant to be like a giant like middle finger to like the modern classic cocktail movement and whatnot, but they use jiggers to measure out the rum.
It's a very loose,
but they
very loosely
they jigger into. They pour into the jigger, but they let it overflow for about 2 more ounces, and then they drop the jigger in. And it's one of the coolest things ever.
I know. And for certain regulars of mine that like stronger drinks, I do that.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's so funny. Like, yeah. When we go to all these classic cocktail bars, and I'm not knocking anyone, but it's like some, you know, like, just like in the state of things nowadays, like, where we're, like, super specific about, like, you know, what is an actual bar spoon measurement? And what is, like, you know, we do a half teaspoon of this and, like, you know, 3 drops of this and whatnot. It's like, then you go to Tiki Tea.
Yeah.
People are smoking cigars in there. And they're using a jigger, but they're just letting it overflow by, like, a couple of ounces, then dumping it in. It's just, like, a big fuck you to, like, all that. But they're not meaning to be that way. But I just think it's funny that they're using a measurement device.
I know. I tried to explain it. I was like, it's, like, half between free pouring and measuring. Like, you can't really explain it unless someone's been there.
It's
but
like,
it's great,
yeah,
you know.
It's so cool. It's so ridiculous. And it's one of the places that's actually grandfathered in, like, to where you can actually still smoke in there. Which
yeah, because
actually
it's
adds,
only owner-operated. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny to me that it builds into the whole experience. You know? I mean, like, even if, like, I mean, when I first started bartending in Oklahoma City, the bar that I first started at, I was there for about 2 months. And people could smoke in there, and then
oh, really?
That's when the ban went into effect. And we were probably like way on the tail end of like everyone banning smoking in bars.
Yeah, I would think so.
But it was like I was like, wait a minute. Oh, Jesus. I'm okay. I can actually smell the wine that I'm drinking, or like, you know, like I can actually like have this full experience, you know. But there's something to be said about like tiki drinks in a old crusty like.
Yeah,
divey.
I want a fog cutter and a fog in a tobacco smell.
Yeah, totally.
I mean it. Yeah, it. I don't know if we'll ever get that in New York, but you know, it's interesting. There are a couple like LA bars that have figured it out how to get around it. You know, besides the tiki tea, like Kanya Rum Bar, which. I mean, one day, literally, I barred back there was one day, and then I moved back to New York. But it was fun, and I was a regular there. It was they actually have an outdoor area where you can have cigars and rum together. And then La Descarga, too, has an area in the back where you can have rum neat, rum on ice, and really good cigars. It's awesome. I would love to see that in New York. I don't know if it's going to happen, though.
It sounds like the patio of Tiki Adams' place.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's exactly
what it is, right?
Yeah, so maybe it does exist. But, I mean, going back to New York, though, I mean, for me, it's interesting because we had Lonnie Kai closed, which was, it was a really, you know, sad day for me because I was a regular there. That's where I got hired for the first time. And then PKNY has closed this week, which is, it's awful. It's a real blow to the culture at large, but I mean,
but what you just said about those, it's those were not closed because of lack of interest.
Oh, of course not. It was outside issues on both of them.
You know, really, yeah. You know, like real estate and like all the bullshit that we deal with.
It was New York bullshit. Yeah.
So like, to me, it's understandable, but yeah. You know, that's just going to come back around.
Yeah, it's too bad that the consumer maybe thinks that it's, oh, well, I guess tiki doesn't work in New York, which is, I mean, it's ridiculous. Last year, I think it was around April, or it was April of this year, I saw Jeff Barry at the Museum of Natural History, and I thought it was just going to be sort of a general talk on tiki and maybe equate it to, you know, the Polynesian cultures that are in the museum, but the whole lecture was on how Hawaii and New York was considered Hawaii's ninth island because we had urban luaus here. We had really great venues like the Hawaii Kai on Broadway, the luau on 57th, the Hawaiian Room on Lexington, and, you know, obviously Trader Vic's, which is where 2001 was conceived of in that bar. So it's, and the first zombie ripoff was at this place called Monty Proser's, who had the balls to serve it at the 39 World's Fair and said, "Oh, if you're in LA, go say hi to Don for me." Like, and he was, you know, that's some great copyright infringement right there when you actually reference the person that you're ripping off.
That's pretty ballsy.
Well, back then, you know, there was no, you know, internet, so someone on Yelp couldn't, from California, be like, this is ridiculous. I went to the World's Fair, and it's not even close to the zombie I had in L.A., you know?
It's almost like the modern-day equivalent of us saran-wrapping a shot glass of Fernet and putting it into the pocket of a customer when they say they're going down the street to our friend's bar.
Yeah.
Because that does happen. Also, don't leave your cell phone on the bar because we'll saran wrap that too.
Well, Damon will. Damon has a weird obsession with this. I don't get the joke. I wasn't there at the beginning of it, but I'm amused by it.
I don't even get it.
Yeah.
I still do it though. We're at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Garrett, thank you again for coming on the show.
It's always a pleasure.
I know you're going to be on again.
New York is going to have a tiki renaissance. We're waiting for the next crest of the wave that's going to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And start it by coming to the luau.
Absolutely.
That's going to be this Saturday, July 27th at Res, which is at
372 Columbia in Red Hook.
Awesome.
Well, guys, I want to say that just again, congratulations to all of our friends who took home a ton of awards.
New York sweep.
New York just swept it up.
But before we leave, can we do this bit in the radio voices?
Oh, yeah.
That we do behind the bar?
All right. Oh, yeah.
All right, so we had a New York sweep at the at the Tales of the Cocktail Conference. We had a Dead Rabbit getting 2 awards. We had the Clover Club getting 3 Julia Reiner. Oh my God, getting the best bar mentor. She gave me my first job. I don't know what she was thinking. I'm going to throw it back to my friend Damon. He's going to give us a little bit of the closer on this show.
Well, Gary Richards just came back into the studio at 2 for Tuesday.
2 for Tuesday.
A little bit late by one day, but that's okay. We'll see him anyway.
Turn the knob off and shut off your podcast because we're over.
We'll see you next week on the Speakeasy.
Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you started in the end.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.